Welcome to Coach, the professional coaching podcast. Conversations to explore what coaching is really all about, what it takes to be a great coach, and why coach training really does make the difference. Discover how coaching can help you in all areas of your life and business in a fast-paced and demanding world. So join us here to share conversations and insights with some of the best coaches from around the globe. Real coaches, real talk. So let's get started with me, your host, Teresa Brooks. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coach, the Professional Coaching Podcast. And today I am with Chris Bailey. Now, today is actually the last day of 2020, which many of us will be quite happy about, I should imagine. But also, as we kind of tip over into 2021, we have some trepidation around this. And this is going to be the focus of some of our conversation today. So I want to welcome Chris. Chris is a transformational coach, a clinical hypnotist, and a psychotherapist, as well as being an NLP master practitioner. So he has many skills, and he has actually featured in Coach magazine last year around the fear method that he created. And fear is a word that we are going to talk about today. But first of all, let's welcome Chris to the show. Thanks for turning up today, Chris.
Thank you very much for having me. Good to see you too.
New Year's Eve, which doesn't feel quite like the ones we've had before, does it?
No, it's a very different year, much quieter and a lot more tension in the air.
Yeah, exactly. You can feel it lately as well. And I don't think the lack of sunshine helps, does it, really, when it's a bit miserable winter anyway. So we have to try and look for some sunshine where we can. And today we're going to talk about, you know, emotional management, and we're going to talk about fear. And we're going to dig into that, and you are going to help us to understand, and our lovely listeners, as to how they can, you know, really manage their fear on a daily, hourly basis, and just generally anyway, and why that's so important. So let's kick off with talking about, you know, our emotions, because obviously that's what drives us, that's what we respond to. And just off air a minute ago, we were talking about the need for emotional management. So Chris, why is it so important for us to be able to manage our emotions, not just fear, but all of them?
Well, it comes down to how we perceive emotions fundamentally. Most of us think emotions are things that happen to us, and that determines our quality of life, the way that we feel. Anything we seek to gain or seek to do in life is based off of seeking an emotion, which basically tells us if we're living well or not. And so realistically, with emotions, you need to understand that they're signals. They're not your identity. They're just signals. But they're signals that tell you how well you're doing. They give you the nudge in the right direction. So to be able to manage them, you're able to recognize that they are signals, and then interpret those signals and then respond effectively, rather than getting lost in the emotion and having a heightened escalation of, say, fear or panic or anger, and instead allow it to dissipate and then act from a neutral place where you have your clarity and your better judgment. So you can basically have that emotional wisdom, which will give you then wisdom in your life, so you can lead a better life.
Yeah, and that's really well described there. I'm sure a lot of people will resonate with that, in terms of you think that the emotions are you, you know, yeah. And this is how I feel, so therefore this must be true. This is what's happening to me. Yeah. And so that's very disempowering, isn't it? And it's not something that a lot of people think that they could control. It's just, oh, well, this, you know, you hear, this is just how I feel. I can't help it. It's how I feel. And of course, you know, coaches will understand, and NLP practitioners will understand, that you can choose your state and you can change that. So, like, for instance, great example, the other day I was writing out a whole email sequence and it was flowing, it was going really well, I was really happy with it, forgot that I was in a different position in the house and didn't have my computer plugged in. And guess what happened?
Oh, right, it died.
Of course it did. And everything went, okay? The whole lot went. And I sat there, and I hadn't saved, right? Hands up, hadn't saved, because I got so engrossed and I'm normally just fully plugged in. And I sat there and it went, and I knew it had gone, and I was like, oh. And of course, you know, all those emotions rose up of like, I'm angry with myself and all that. And then, you know, I just decided I'm not going to be annoyed about that. I'm not going to be annoyed about it. And I wasn't. And you know what? It's a funny thing, but
a year ago, 2 years ago, that would have ruined my day. Do you know what I mean? I'd have been seething over that for a long time. But I just decided not to. So it's really, really possible to just choose that. But I think the simplicity of it just sounds too simple, don't you think?
It does. It's interesting that you said you decided, because actually the original word in Latin means to cut away. So to cut away all other options. And I think people like to have options like, oh, I'm going to dwell in this emotion for a while and then I'll see what happens. They leave it to fate. But you only have to say, right, I'm choosing to not feel that now. And you can actually trigger that. But it does take that distance, that emotional distance, to recognize that I'm not the emotion. It's not something that's overwhelmed me. It's just, it's an experience of the body that I am choosing to either buy into or not, but it's just a signal. So yeah, it's a good approach.
That I think is a game changer. If people can master that, it literally does change the way that you experience everything, because then of course you feel more in control. So I didn't feel like the emails and the computer had beaten me and whipped me that day now and you know, been my enemy. I just thought, well, that's just what happened, and next time I'm a save. So go and do it again. And I said, next time you write it'll be better. Do you know what I mean? So we know why it's important in those kind of terms, but why is it really important? So we don't get overwhelmed by them. So we don't believe that we are them. And how does that help when we can get to that stage?
Well, it comes down to the way that you want to feel, not the way that you're being made to feel. So if you felt joy all the time, you'd say you've got a really good life, right? But if you felt joy all the time and things were falling apart around you, you'd still feel good and you'd be happy in life. So people who are very poor and they're in very dire situations, they can still be happy with things that are so terrible in their lives going on that we can barely handle it if we can have a bad Facebook conversation. You know? So like, there's people starving, but they can still have fun. They can still dance, have a laugh, and still have that joy. So realistically, quality of life is the experience, and the emotions create the experience. But it's understanding, obviously, that we have a lot of environmental stimuli that come at us and we need to respond to them. And the emotions that we experience in general are responses to the situation itself or the imagined situations that we're putting ourselves in. So we want to be able to cultivate that experience so that we can take the signal, learn from it, not repeat the emotion and have what we call moods or like dispositions that are basically us not addressing something over time. Then it goes from you being angry in a moment to angry for a few days to generally having a temperament of anger. Like, that's you not addressing a certain aspect of your life. So those signals will stay as long as you don't address them.
That's really interesting, because it's almost like it loads up, it's loading up all the time, because, you know, of course, people that are, like in your example, are angry, you know, an angry disposition to everything, you know, grumpy people. God, they weren't born that way, were they? You know, so it's a cumulative, isn't it? And so what you're saying is that emotion is a signal, is a trigger to say, hey, look, something's going on. You need to address it. And the more that you don't, and the more that you ignore it or stick the plaster over it, as many do, and just carry on, it will pop up maybe in another way, or maybe it will have another emotion with it as well. And then it kind of all gets packed one on top of the other, doesn't it? And I think, you know, this really kind of leads to how it manifests for people, you know, in their well-being. So when there isn't enough emotional management, or people don't have the skills to do it, how does it manifest in people's well-being? I'm talking about mental health and physical health and emotional also.
Well, you could say most problems people have in their life come from an emotional source. If you think about even physical health, if you're someone who doesn't have good stress coping mechanisms, something comes up, then you turn to something that will dissociate you a bit, like some alcohol, or you distract yourself by eating more, then you're putting things into your body that are going to cause problems down the line. And obviously down the line, then you could have health issues that are related to obesity or like the destruction of your liver if it was alcohol. And eventually they'll cause chronic illness. And it all came from a lack of taking care of yourself because you were unable to basically process the experience as it was. And then you turn to other things to numb you down, because numbing down makes you feel better than obviously feeling. And if you have to cut your senses down to feel better, then you know you've got a problem, right? So what we want to do is be able to allow you to fully experience life, be in it, but process it fluidly, allow it to flow through you essentially in a natural way without you getting stuck somewhere and then creating physiological issues, inflammation in the body, long-term health problems, addictions, family problems, and just general, you know, problems in your own life, like money, work.
It's interesting, isn't it, that a lot of people would understand this when you're speaking about it like that, but in their life they would describe it quite differently, and also you'll find that people that are quite unwell are normally quite unhappy as well. Are they unhappy because they're unwell, or are they unwell because they were unhappy? Do you know what I mean? And so it's about tracing it back, isn't it, or realizing actually that you are responsible for where you are, you know, and how you feel. And, you know, there's not one person, I shouldn't think, listen to this podcast, who has never reached for a glass of wine or a beer or a whiskey or whatever it is. Think, God, what a day. Do you know what I mean? Or that person's really annoyed me, or I'm upset. And it's because, you know, that sort of numbing down shows we don't really like or welcome these unwelcome negative emotions. You know, that's how we see them. They're sort of like unwelcome visitors to us. So we only want the happy ones. But actually, let's talk a little bit about why it's important to experience those. I mean, you've touched on it there in terms of if you let it flow through you and you can really experience that emotion, you can process it. So let's talk a little bit and explain to us, Chris, how people can experience those bad emotions and be strong enough to take them and process them in the way that you described. How can they start doing that?
So this is a good segue into the fear method itself, like what it was designed for. And the big part of it is obviously how to understand fear in the first place. But it's called the fear method because of the mnemonic, but it's actually for any unwelcome emotion. Okay, so it could be used for any kind of emotional discomfort. But essentially, you need to have the right position. There has to be a bring it on mentality for anything, for you to be prepared for it physiologically. Otherwise, you can go into fight or flight. So essentially, you want to be able to trigger yourself into fight more than flight. And the reason why is, if you fight something, if you had a lion coming towards you, unlikely, but if you had a lion coming towards you, and you knew that you could face it, and you were strong enough to be able to take on the lion, or it'd be a close match, you know that there's a definitive outcome at the end where the experience ends, right? Where you've defeated the lion, let's say. In that situation, there's a resolve and then a closure to the situation. Whereas if you have a flight response, you try and run away and avoid something, you're constantly burning energy through your body to run away 24/7 from that lion. And you'll never stop running, and you'll eventually get caught, and it will take you out in some form or another, whether or not that's your chronic illness later on in life, or whether or not it's some bad decision you've made. And so that's what emotions are like. They can be like a lion chasing you. And so we need to be able to process them properly, but from a fight standpoint, and in a fight standpoint where we know that we'll win. So then we have that boost, and that gives us the momentum to continue to become more motivated, feel more powerful within our environment to be able to overcome what it brings to us. And naturally, that is good for your evolution as a person, for the development of your status within a situation, because you're more capable, and more capable people rise to the top of hierarchies, which means that they can provide more value to their people and the situations they're in. And so naturally, you'll have a better life for it. And so we all have to face our lions, or in ancient mythology, it would be the dragon going and slaying the dragon. You know, you could be going to your doom, but you've got to face it that way because it's the only way to face it. And so it starts with that.
That's really interesting. And I, you know, it may not be hopefully a physical lion, but lions come in many forms, right? So we have lions metaphorically chasing us all the time. And of course, people feel fear all the time, and it's a it's an underlying human condition, is the fear there to protect us, of course, you know. So let's just talk about what the mnemonic is before we dig into it a little bit more.
Sure. So fear, spelled F-E-A-R, it's feel everything, accept, relax, and then you respond to the situation. Okay. So quite simple, easy to remember, which is what you want in the time where you might be experiencing it. Fear, right, cool, feel everything, accept, relax, respond.
Yeah. So the acceptance there is a big piece, isn't it? You know, because the first bit where you sort of feel everything, that's when the panic can come in, and you feel it, oh, you know, lion, whatever it is, I'm feeling the fear or whatever emotion that might be. And so I think, you know, for me, and I don't know about for you, but the acceptance piece is huge. Accepting what you feel in that moment as being okay. And of course it's not permanent, and we'll talk about when things get to a permanent state as well, a little bit like you touched on, but I think that's really, really interesting to just accept. And how can people in the mindset, how can they just accept it? Is it just as simple as, again, deciding to accept that in the moment, this is an emotion and it will pass, or it needs responding to? How would you recommend?
Well, part of the fear method, there's a little trick to it in basically goal psychology. Essentially, what you need to do is have a bigger vision. It's the idea of purpose, essentially. And so when you go into using the fear method, you want to think of it as something that levels you up. It's something that you could go level one, level two, up to a level a million, right? And your aim in life is to max it out, right? So you could seek it, and then it becomes a type of exposure therapy in itself, which is also proven to be an effective way to face fear. So essentially what you do is go in with the idea, right, by willingly embracing this technique, this is my weapon in the situation. And every time that I do experience something, it's an opportunity to level up. Every time I use the technique, whether or not I fail or not, by going in for mastery, I can see the bigger picture. I can see the end. I can see myself as being the stoic or the immovable object in this situation. And that makes it easy to get through because it's just a transient experience then. So you go for mastery. And obviously implicit in going to master something is the innate failures that you're going to have. So you know that straight away you're not going to be perfect. You're going to start at an apprentice level. You're going to work your way up to intermediate until you're a master, right? So you want to go in with that frame so that it's like, I'm mastering fear from now on. Anytime I feel an uncomfortable emotion or I'm in some kind of mood or uncomfortable, I'm going to use the fear method. And there's a few ways to use it. And then you can level up and you'll notice the results so fast, it's unbelievable, and your quality of life will change in every single area. It's just all, it's all linked.
I think that's really interesting, the part about failing at it as well, because I think one of the things that, you know, people kick themselves all the time. It's like, oh no, I tried it and it didn't work. I tried it, or, you know, I didn't do very well. And then of course that self-perpetuates into, oh, I must be rubbish, I can't do it. And it goes round and round again. So being able to say, okay, so maybe in that particular example, I didn't quite master that and it did overwhelm me in that space, but actually next time I can try it again. So allowing yourself to, you know, and let's not even use the word fail, but allowing yourself to have different experiences with the technique or the ways of doing it seems to make sense to me, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm sure contributes to all of this, like well-being and mental health, is the pressure that we put on ourselves. So not only the responses, our emotions are sort of more in control of us than we are in control of them, but the pressure sometimes to be able to master this stuff quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like anything, could be your life, your business, but I must do it quickly. I must be good at it. I must get it right first time.
Yeah.
So I think that's important for people to really hear that. And it's okay to have to do something more than once. I mean, seriously, you talked about mastering fear and becoming master of your emotions. And of course that is going to take time, and there's always going to be surely times where you don't quite master it, that one, but again the times that you feel that must get shorter and shorter and shorter, right?
Yeah. And on my programs, when I work with people, I use accelerating methods like hypnotherapy, where there's that heightened neuroplasticity, to train it in faster. So obviously anyone could just take this and do it and they'll get great results. It's exactly how I overcame depression and anxiety, but refined, essentially. And it's great to have that empowerment. It's like knowing you're not going into face a lion with no weapon. So once you've got that technique, it's like, okay, well, this is it's more than a technique. It's a way of life. It's the way of mastery. And every time I face one of these tough situations, it's a sacred moment. It doesn't matter whether I pass or fail the situation. It's a moment where I'm being spiritually developed. I'm being physically developed. And I'll face it like it's that sacred moment. And you welcome it then. And actually, most of the uncomfortable emotions that we experience ever are imagined. And it's when we resist the reality of things. So if I'm resisting something, I'm trying to push something inevitable away. And then you get like cognitive dissonance as well coming in, which further plagues you and makes you feel bad. So you need to basically do away with resistance. And that's the whole point in the bring it on. Like, oh, you've got to dedicate to being a master, be a master as quickly as you can be, and you'll throw yourself into the deep end, but you'll realize that you can swim, that you're not going to drown. It might be a bit uncomfortable, a bit of a shock when you hit the water, but you survive and you're okay. And soon you dominate the deep end. And it's just how we essentially become our best and our freest self to face the shadows that we have in reality.
And I guess it's like, you know, it is that first time that you go into the deep end as such. And then when you realize that you can swim and that you can make it, of course, you're quite happy then to jump in the deep end. And, you know, even physically as a child, I remember being on the top board, you know, at that swimming school. And it was like so far down and I was so scared. I thought, I'm definitely going to die. Like the pool is not deep enough for how high this board is. But you've got no choice because obviously you've got to jump. You've got a queue of kids behind you. A feeling that you have once you've done it and realize that you didn't die, of course, and you got out of the pool, and then it's like, yeah, let's do it again. And it's like that in life, isn't it? But, you know, what about when people have got to the stage, Chris? Does this work at any stage? I mean, you know, we're talking about people's mental health, and actually I want to touch on the fact of the fear and how people are feeling at the moment is that the fear could be creeping in a little bit. It could be accelerating, and we dealt with this back in, you know, sort of early spring of 2020, but I think, you know, from what I see, it's definitely there as unrest. And so, you know, it can this be an immediate effect, and can this work just as well for people that have had, you know, long-term well-being issues?
Definitely. The number one way to stop a panic attack for people who've had it for any amount of time is to say bring it on. Do your worst, because the panic attack perpetuates because of the resistance, and that creates an anxiety loop. So even with people with chronic problems, it's always because they are unable to accept reality for how it is. And actually, when you get to that point where you see it as it is, you're not burdened with the endless amounts of resistance and mental resources and emotional resources that are put into cushioning you in a way that it thinks is protecting you. And this is where it goes into how fear method works with attachment styles. Like we mentioned on our previous chat, we had there's a few attachment styles. You've got secure, anxious, and avoidant. Anxious people, they'll go ahead and they'll contemplate the future. They'll think about worst possible outcomes so that they feel like they can try and find a better way to navigate it and solve the problem before it happens. That's useful, but the anxiety feeling isn't useful. And obviously, when you can't rest from it, it becomes a problem and it becomes destructive. And it takes you away from the present moment too. When you're avoidant, you're trying to run away from the lion, like we spoke about earlier on. And a lot of people do this in subtle ways where they dissociate from their experience. So they feel like they're dreaming and that they're sort of seeing the world from a non-in-it perspective. So they get very in their heads, which is a common expression.
Yes.
And that's when people have an avoidant mechanism, which is to cope with stress. But the problem is there's still a limited amount of stress the body can take. And after a while, that person will be initially unreactive, but then they'll explode and they'll have a blowout. They'll have an emotional burst, or they'll run away and have to get out of a situation and just hide for a bit.
It's a bit dramatic. The responses become more dramatic, whether they're physical, emotional, or
And anxious people tend to have that sort of franticness. They can't sit still. They always feel keyed up. And they sort of worry about what's going to happen. And they just basically stay in this future-based thought loop. And then depressed people, they're always ruminating on the past. They're always thinking about either something terrible that happened, and they're still letting that event that passed a long time ago plague them now, and they're repeating it. And then your body literally doesn't know the difference between imagination and reality as far as its chemical response is concerned. So it will continue to relive and relive and relive. Same with PTSD.
Mm.
And or they think about a time when things were good, and then they miss those times, and then you get melancholy.
Mm.
And so all of these things are going to happen more so when you're basically taken out of life, like we have been now, sat in a room, which is your house, and then suddenly you've got nothing to do, and you're stuck with how you feel. And then you realize, oh my God, I've been storing up this bank of stress for a long time. And that's when people get problems coming up, because when you get a chance to rest, your brain wants to process.
Right, yes.
So that's why people get these issues, and that's why domestic violence is on the rise. And that's why people with mental health disorders and suicides are going up, because it's got to that point where, right, now it's time to process it all, but no one has a mechanism, a tool that they can use to process it with.
It's too much.
Mm. Yeah, and half of the population have an insecure attachment style in like a diagnosed sort of insecurity. And people can have a mix of anxious and avoidant. And then the other 50% who are secure, they still have levels of anxiousness and avoidance. It's just less. So the most confident people you see are the most secure. They have the least anxiousness and the least avoidance, basically. And so to get around that, you have to develop mindfulness. Mm. So in the developmental literature, it's shown that people with anxious and avoidant attachment styles have low levels of trait mindfulness, lower than secure attached people. And they have also less emotional intelligence, so they have less ability to process emotions. And if that's not a red flag as to why you should develop mindfulness, then obviously, I mean, it's very obvious. And there's been
It's obvious from the outside in. And yeah. Sometimes, of course, when we are that person or we might be experiencing that, it needs that external input to give the space so that people can realize. Because imagine the frustrated mind and the anxious mind and suggesting some mindfulness. There's a bit of a gap between how they're feeling and being able to take that mindful practice. So it does need some support, doesn't it? I mean, some of it obviously can be self-driven. Even something as simple as the other day, I mean, I bought my daughter a mindfulness colouring book for Christmas, and she absolutely loves it. She's always loved, you know, those tiny, tiny little details. But they do them for adults as well. And I used one at one point where I was feeling particularly harassed last year and not too well. And I found myself picking up this book and the colouring pens. And you know what? It was amazing, because I was so focused on what I was doing that it really, really helped, which is a form of mindfulness. Now, of course, I was consciously aware of what I was doing, but I hadn't really used a tool quite like that before. So I think, you know, maybe it's a good idea if people can think about really simple mindfulness or things that they've got in around them that they're used to, perhaps. What do you think about that? You know, because some people find techniques a bit scary, even if they're not. But in that state of mind, lots of things can be scary, I guess.
Yeah, that is exactly true. When you're in it, you feel like you're stuck and there's no other reality. You are in a box. But when you have to know that these things work. You need to know that you need to develop mindfulness.
Yeah.
Because if you develop mindfulness, the state of mindfulness over time, which is literally just focusing on something, you do it for 3 seconds by focusing at the palm of your hand. I've just been mindful for 3 seconds there. But we're cultivating today people's attention spans to be really short and snappy through the usage of phones, so people have more problems. So it is really down to focus. But when you've developed the state mindfulness for a while and you have a constant practice, it develops into trait mindfulness, which is what the people who are secure have in higher levels, and that increases their emotional intelligence. It increases their ability to empathize and understand the emotions of other people and the behaviors of other people so that they don't feel threatened by misreading signals.
Mm-hmm.
But they can understand their own responses too, so that they know how to address themselves. specifically. And the only way you can know that is to understand the nature of the movements of the body. And it's all literally just paying attention. And that's exactly the process of the fear method, where you feel everything, you notice the sensations. That in itself creates a dissociation. So you get that space the second that you choose to feel it, because you're recognizing, I am not anger. I am not angry. I am experiencing anger. Mm. There is anger here. So you notice it in your body, notice the different areas. And by doing that, you're saying, oh, there's a feeling there in this part of my body or in my shoulders. And that then takes all of the pressure off of you. And you're like, oh, right, I'm the powerful person behind all of the experience, these emotions. And then I can choose how to change the situation. So that's how you get into it initially. Mm. Just feel it. And in that, it will naturally make it feel better. And then the acceptance of it is really saying, bring it on. So you can really understand it and get into it, process it. And the best way to do that, in my experience, is to just thank it, having gratitude, because then you're shifting your state to gratitude.
Mm.
In another situation, you have that ability to do so, but you're thanking the signals for being there,
for helping.
Mm. Yeah, for helping. And then obviously, because the last part is relaxing, you're letting the physical energy release, the tension release, so you get back to neutral. When you change your physiology, your psychology and your moods change. And so you're getting really good emotional awareness and training your emotional intelligence this way too. And then you respond from that neutral place where you have your wisdom again. And so then you say, right, now how can I best address the situation? And then you get the actual plan. Then you get the plan that isn't the anxiety loop that doesn't solve anything. You're not getting the runaway loop, which means you're leaving your problems behind, but they'll catch you.
Mm.
You're going straight into, okay, I've got a plan now, and this plan's going to let me deal with it. And because that plan's set, I can forget about that problem because I'm going to execute the plan. So the problem is no longer there, and it's no longer in my imagination playing over because I have the strategy to overcome it.
Yeah.
So and you can do that in so many ways.
And quickly as well, you know, all of that, which you've just spent time describing, can happen in a matter of moments, right?
Yeah.
You know,
the more you do it, the quicker it becomes. It becomes instinctive after a while, which is why there are two ways that I teach people to use it, which is it just makes life easier. The first way is using it as a daily meditation. So you process the garbage that's already there and what's existing in you in the morning and in the evening. Do 5 minutes a day to begin with if you want, just 5 minutes in the morning or the evening. But ideally, get to 20 minutes a day altogether, maybe 10 in the morning, 10 at night, or more. And you just sit there with your body. You can close your eyes to help you get that internal focus. And just notice how your body feels. And then go to each part where you're experiencing these different discomforts or emotions. And thank them, send gratitude for them for sending you the signals, for keeping you alive. And then you transform them like an alchemist into from negative to positive. You turn them into gold. It's like, okay, the learning's taken. Your subconscious knows that you learned from it, knows that you're going to act on it. And then you relax the body, which gets you calm. It gets all of your emotional state good. It reduces inflammation in the body. It cuts those cycles completely. And then you can have a little think, okay, now how am I going to respond to the situation? I'm going to do this, this, and this. And this is what I can do right now. The first thing I can do right now. So you know it's going to get done once you've initiated the process. And then that's your meditation. And what could be done right now is that, okay, I'm going to get ready and go to work. And then as soon as I sit down at work, I'm going to tackle this thing that's been causing me the problem. And when you know that, you can relax, you can enjoy the rest of your morning before you go to work because you know that you've got the plan set, there's the freedom there. And then when things come up in the day, the other way you use it is running it through in the moment. When something happens, you're actually triggered and you're sort of caught off guard, feel everything with that bring it on attitude, right? Remembering that it's mastering it, you're like, hell yeah, bring it on. And then you accept it, you go, thanks for this experience, now I'm going to grow. And then you feel like excited. You've got a bit of adrenaline going. You're like, oh, I'm excited. I feel great now because I'm growing from this in all of the ways we've discussed. Thanks for that. And then, right, relax my body because I want to feel free and be ready to tackle this. Right, now let's respond. The first thing I should do is this. And your brain is so fast at processing that this does literally happen in milliseconds. It might feel like a minute, but it's faster than that.
And it's incredible, isn't it, how our brains will actually do what they are told. And I think this is the quite amusing part, is that we spend a lot of time, you know, or can spend a lot of time feeling out of control or disempowered or all of the things we've talked about, when actually it's so easy to kind of like flick that switch, if you like, and change it. So it's a case of really understanding that, you know, this is what real freedom and empowerment is about, is your choice to experience everything, you know, what you're going to make it mean, really, not the actual thing that's happening. And I think that's really key to help people right now, is that, you know, the whole, everything that's going on in the world, it is just what's going on in the world. Do you know what I mean? And it's the response to it. And yes, there are intense responses, but it's still the same. Okay, we don't need to measure the actual response, do we? It's just the response to it. You can control it, and you can decide how you want to approach it and how long you want to live in that state for as well. Because actually, you know, there's only now anyway. Yeah. Isn't there? So, you know, there's no actual past or future. There's only now. So you might as well feel good, even if you feel a bit shit. Excuse my French.
Yeah, it's a very stoic way of being. I always really loved this stoic philosophy, because it was about controlled conditioning. You want to willingly experience stress to train your threshold, so those things don't matter when they come up. And that's another part of this method. It is very much on that stoic level of seeking stress. Like, a really good practice that I can't vouch for enough is using the fear method with cold showers. Because that is
very Wim Hof.
Yeah, it is very much so. Like, he focuses on breathing, which is mindfulness there. Obviously, you want to use this method to be able to, you want to have this method usable in every situation. But there aren't many situations that are much worse than walking into an ice cold shower first thing in the morning. You don't experience that much of discomfort throughout the day ever, realistically, unless something really traumatic happens. So if you can do that in a cold shower, so you frame yourself, right, this is mastery, this is my daily exercise to physically bring on stress and set the tone for me facing this and mastering this fear. I'm going to get in a cold shower now. And when you get in, you feel it hit your body. And instead of dissociating, which is what I used to do in cold showers and try and ignore it, which you can't do for very long before you start.
No, I bet you can't. just ignore this freezing cold water.
I just say, bring it on. And I step in and I focus on my body's sensations. And when it hits, I can feel the sharp daggers of the cold hit like my forehead and my chest and everywhere else. And I just stand there and I focus on that sensation and allow myself to accept it. And then I thank it for making me stronger, because that's what every experience does. And then you actually get to the point where you're like, oh, this is all right. And you kind of wash it like it's a normal shower, because you've got past that resistance to it and you've allowed your body and mind to control and distress. And it really expands your horizons, because the more new things that you do, the more areas you stretch your comfort zones, then naturally the more things that are comfortable. And it allows you to have something that will make you comfortable with the unknown, make you feel comfortable even in discomfort, because you know how to face it. You're used to it being a comfortable, ordinary part of your day to experience discomfort and transmute it into comfort. And that's exactly what this whole approach does. Mm. So there's so many ways you can use it, but it's really, if you do the morning meditation, the evening meditation for 10 minutes each time, and then you go through the cold shower, and then you do your day, bringing that up every time you can remember to. You could even, one thing I recommend is getting like a bracelet of some kind that you can remind yourself by looking at it. That's like the fear method bracelet or whatnot, something that's a cue. So then throughout the day, you recognize it, like, oh yeah, the fear method. And then you can check in how you feel every time you notice it and go through it just to flush out any background stress. But also in stressful situations, it can add as a visual cue to remind you, oh yeah, do the fear method.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really important to have visual cues and actual things that you do that remind you to do this. Because obviously all of this is like mental and emotional processing, and some people are not great at doing that automatically. So it's really important to add those things to it. And I think, you know, it's fascinating to listen to you, Chris, and it's really interesting. If anyone hasn't read the article, you should be able to go back and find the back copy of that on the website when it launches in January and have a read about Chris's fear method. But I'm sure you've got it on your website as well. So where can people find you, Chris, and find out a bit more about this and sort of digest some of it?
So currently I'm doing programs, sort of bespoke to people for the fear method mastery, to take them through it based on, you know, budget considerations and whatnot. If you go to www.simplemindology.com, you can find it there. You can book a free consultation and we can talk about it there and discuss what's best for you. Naturally, my aim is to help more than make money. So it's realistically, I'll do as much as I physically can that works for the individual. So amazing. If you want any more personalized stuff, go there. Mm. And there's other programs too for anxiety mastery and confidence building that sort of link in. But the foundation really is the fear method. And then other things can be built around that because it's getting that stable foundation.
Yeah, that's like the core of it, isn't it? But of course, you know, things manifest themselves in lots of different ways. But perhaps, yeah, anyone that's listening to this podcast will have thought, well, actually, that's a bit more me than I realized, or, you know, notice that, especially I think when one single emotion comes up all the time, that's the one to look for, isn't it? You know, to say, what do you want? You know, what do you want? Yeah. What are you trying to tell me? And it's really strange. It's another thing I do is I question all my feelings now as well, sort of try and trace it back like a little thread to where it's come from. Yeah. You notice the little patterns. And so it's really, again, like everything in coaching, it's about raising awareness. You know, like the very, very first step is to just notice more about yourself, how you feel, and, you know, really observe that initially to know that there's a lot going on, because we're so kind of automatic with everything we do. I don't think we realize quite all the signals and signs that we are getting. So it's been fascinating to talk this through. What would be your last words, Chris, for anyone, you know, struggling a little bit with the fear of the unknown at the moment?
The number one takeaway is see it as an opportunity to master yourself, to master your own reality. Just say, bring it on. Bring it on. I'm going to master this. And just in the act of facing it and accepting it, you can have a clearer direction to respond to it. And that'll get rid of most of the suffering in itself.
It's the fundamental thing, isn't it? Like, face the fear and do it anyway. So it's like, don't run away. Like, face the lion, believing that you can beat it.
Yeah.
You know? It's a great message. So listen, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And thank you for the really insightful content that you've brought. And it's just been a pleasure. So I want to wish you all the best for 2021. And I've no doubt that we'll speak again very, very soon.
Thank you very much. Have a great new year, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read Coach Magazine for free online every quarter. Just subscribe at coach-magazine.com and receive it direct to your inbox. You can order print copies, book a directory listing, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram.